Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Big, 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 big weekend coming up in sports. Blue Jays spring training. March Madness rolls on. But it's the Eric Schallgren era. And we got to discuss it. And here to do that, Nick Kyprios, former NHL forward and co-host of Real Kipper and Born Kipper. Have you bought in?
What's going on? I'll tell you what I'm not, what I have not bought in. That JD goes out yesterday for St. Patrick's Day and March Madness starts, and he doesn't show up for work the next day. That's what I'm not buying in.
One too many little Buddhas, Kipper.
Called it a veteran move.
Which is fine. But you know, over the course of the NHL, how many guys practice drunk? Like thousands. You just find a way to get it done.
Wait. Drunk, okay? Or hungover?
Yeah. Aren't they the same? If you're literally, like, leaving the bar and going to the rink for practice, technically, are you hungover?
Yeah, they're the same until about 8 a.m., I'd say.
And I promise
I'm not saying that because it's 9 a.m. now and my energy's picked up. I think that's roughly the cutoff. You're still drunk until you've had breakfast and your first coffee. Then it's a hangover. If it's
I will say as someone who still plays beer league hockey, playing drunk would be far more dangerous.
But you find a way. And JD mailed it in today. Completely mailed it in. But if he had six or eight little Buddhas, I may find a way to forgive him.
Well, I hear he's on the take for free ones. So I hear he's getting swag and he's getting sent new flavors. So I assume he was. To be clear to the listener, he did book this ahead of time. It's not a call-in. It's a well-planned out long weekend. But we don't get his takes on Schallgren. What do you think of the Rook, Kipper, here 2.5 games in? Obviously, you're not, you know, changing the fate of the franchise based on two games, but are you buying that he can be a solid backup option here?
I think one day for sure. And, you know, are you going to give him the opportunity that Jordan Binnington had years ago where he can come in and he can go game to game or be in a position to carry momentum? It's such a long shot. And the reason why far and few is because the odds are overwhelmingly against something like that happening. But are the Leafs in a position now where Jack Campbell's still not ready and Peter Mrazek, the whole world, doesn't think he can do the job? And yeah, like, there's a little bit of magic going. And right now, if the team's responding well, which they did last night, great team game last night, at least better than what we've seen in the last 6 weeks. So why not just run it one more game? I don't see any issues there. And, you know, most importantly is that there's not a fight for a playoff spot here. Yeah, you can still probably think that for whatever reason you might be better up in the standings than in a wild card position, or maybe not. I don't know. But at the end of the day, all you're doing is you've got 20 games left here to get your game in order. That's it. 20 exhibition games for the real season starting, you know, first week in May.
Yeah, there might be a ceiling here for Eric Schallgren that, you know, has him play NHL hockey for several seasons. I don't know if anyone's banking on him being, you know, the Jordan Binnington type or the guy that the Leafs really, you know, put all their eggs in his basket. But I feel like the more realistic thing right now is just getting from point A to point B, and point B being the return of Jack Campbell, right?
I would think so. And again, I mean, we're days away from shutting down a trade deadline. I don't know how Kyle Dubas can be in a position right now to focus on a goaltender when I still believe all along, and it should be the number one priority, is getting some more depth. Like, you get another defenseman. We'll see when Ben Chiarot goes into Florida, but I would imagine that they feel like their goaltender's improved with a better defenseman in front of him. That's how you got to kind of look at Jack Campbell and Mrazek, is that when they do come back and play in net for you again soon, you're going to have a better defenseman in front of him, and maybe that improvement with the structure, which we've seen in the last few games, and automatically they're going to get better by that. That to me is your top priority. I see them running out of time to get to the multiple checklist that Leaf fans think that Kyle now has.
And it's a moving target, right? I mean, like, if you look back on that, we were discussing this in the first hour, looking back in the last 6 weeks, I'm like, what is it supposed to tell you? The problems are shifting. The advantages are shifting. It seems like everything that looks like it's, you know, set in stone changes, and what looks like to be an issue also changes. So I feel like Kyle Dubas is working with a lot of information and trying to decide what exactly needs to be addressed is difficult right now, given that everything that we think we know, we suddenly don't know. And that leads me to the defensive core. Like, if you squint hard enough, it looks capable right now. Like, they've had to break up their top pairing, but everybody is in the position right now that they need to be in order for this to be optimized, with Labushkin playing with Riley and Sandin, who can't play on the right side, playing on the third pairing with Timothy Liljegren, who can't move up himself, and Justin Hall can only play with one guy, it seems, and that's TJ Brody. Like, this right now is as good as it gets, but what happens if anything else happens? What happens if life happens and the playoff happens, when there is some sort of adversity that this team meets? I mean, you need that extra body in order to handle any adversity that comes your way, no?
Yes, and, you know, when it comes to the adversity that you're talking about, you know, I've said it, like, it's not a week before the playoffs start. This is, you know, you're still going down the final stretch here with 20 games to go. It's probably a better time now than it is at any point, because it truly reflects on maybe one or two needs. And again, you prioritize them, and then you ultimately say that you're going to have 15, 18 games for it to all settle in after the trade deadline. So I don't mind that they're going through this right now, because I've said this on our show, Real Kipper and Boring, like, they're not as bad as they've shown in the last 2 weeks. They're not as great as people may think, but they're certainly not as bad as this. So there is a lot of upside still to come with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is it going to be good enough to get to a conference final? Nobody knows that, but there is way more upside, and you just got to believe that you're going to get a healthy Jake Muzzin back when he's ready, and that's going to improve that much more. He still has to play his best hockey of the season, and you hope that's coming. You also hope that, you know, Jack's healing, and whatever he went through and however long he played hurt was a factor, and he may not be a .940 save percentage goalie, but he's not .885 either. So does he come back in and find a nice sweet spot around .910, .912 save percentage? And you hope just Kyle can pull a rabbit out of his hat in the next 48 hours and come up with one more D and roll the dice with it.
Last night was an interesting contrast, Kipper, in that, you know, Carolina is a team that sort of defends effortlessly. Like, if you watch Jacob Slavin out there, his ability to break down a rush and immediately push the puck up ice, like, there are things that Carolina does that maybe the Leafs just don't have in their makeup. But to make up for that, I feel like the work rate from a defensive standpoint was on another level for the Maple Leafs last night. So if you're looking at tape, if you're looking at bringing back, and Sheldon Keefe's looking to make an example and sort of instruct his guys on what needs to happen, I mean, you can pull up video of Slavin, but you could also pull a video of how they played. And I think there's a lot of incentive to play that way. I mean, Carolina is a team that's embarrassed the Leafs at Scotiabank Arena in recent history. Freddie Anderson was in the building and in the opposing net. They were playing without Austin Matthews. And of course, they've got their rookie goaltender, Eric Schallgren, in net. I wonder, how do you bottle that? Because we don't make enough, I don't think, about the motivational element, and playing a certain way, you know, consistently is very hard. But in these spurts, in a moment where you need that effort, the Maple Leafs were able to provide that. So how do you make sure that that lasts?
Yeah, you're talking about attention to detail, but you're also talking about, you know, characteristics of certain players that you have. Like Jordan Staal, to me, I love this guy. But he is, in a perfect world, on a championship team, a third-line center. So he's not feeling the need to play this rush game, score goals, play cheat. I mean, the issue with sometimes the Leafs is that, you know, they push offense too much, and they want the puck up as quickly as possible. The stretch passing, they've cheated a lot in the last month, the Leafs. And I think in the last game that we saw last night, the sense is that we've got this kid in net. We have no idea if he's going to look like Grant Fuhr or, Sammy McKee's beer league goalie, right? You have no idea. So your natural progression is just to insulate him and take the extra second and not cheat or not take any chances. And how do you instill that now moving forward, even if it is Jack Campbell back in net or anyone else? So I really think that, you know, it's a continuation from here on in, way past the deadline. You got 20 games to start instilling a new attitude, a safer attitude, less risky attitude. And, you know, you just hope that these guys can adapt. That's going to be the true measure here, is if they can lose some of the bad habits they've had that's really dug themselves into this mess where they've lost games to, you know, non-playoff teams. So if they can now take what they had in a small sample size of last night and instill it moving forward, then there's a chance that, they're going to go into the first round, albeit probably underdogs, with some confidence that they can play a patient game and yet not take away that ability to put the puck in the net when the opportunity arises.
Couple strong nights for John Tavares. Adding to his point total, I believe he got 2 points in the first game. He was able to add to that against Carolina. Have we learned anything? Did you learn anything in the last two nights from Tavares other than, like, everyone plays better when they play with Mitch Marner?
Well, the mind hasn't changed. He's still as sharp as ever. He's always been a high IQ guy when it comes to offense. And, Mitch is a perfect remedy for anybody that is struggling. And I just think... Overall, they were sharing the puck. There is a tendency, I think, when Austin's out there, that you got to get Austin the puck, right? He's our best goal scorer. Get him the puck. And then there's some times when you love Austin Matthews, but he does hold on to the puck a little bit too long. And then there's less ability to share it, less ability to, watch. And I think sometimes the Leafs have been in the habit of watching Austin Matthews a little bit too much. But when Austin comes back, we're going to spend probably half our show this afternoon talking about, what does Sheldon do? Where does Mitch Marner start Saturday night? And for me, I'd leave him with Tavares.
Luke Fox made, I thought, the perfect analogy when he came on with us in the 7 o'clock hour. He said that the Maple Leafs have pocket queens. I don't know if you're a poker guy, Kipper, but I'm sure you'll get this one either way. That the Leafs have pocket queens, and the flop comes up, and ace king emerge, right? So he knows he's got a good hand. He knows he's got a good team, but the likelihood that a better hand is out there is pretty strong. And with the Panthers and Tampa Bay, the Panthers, you know, more so than Tampa Bay, going out there and looking to improve their team at every possible stop, adding Ben Chiarot, and now Claude Giroux has been heavily, heavily linked to them, and it looks like that could happen before, you know, we even get to the final hours of trade deadline here. Do you think that the Leafs should feel some need to really compete with the transactions that we could see from Florida and we could see from Tampa and the other teams that are going to be competing for the Leafs in the Eastern Conference?
It's not out there, guys. You can wish it all you want, but they've probably left themselves with more flexibility than Kyle Dubas. Kyle Dubas is not only going into this weekend with handcuffs, but his feet are shackled too. And there's like this big ball, you know, on a chain. That's how difficult it's been for him to get anything done moving forward. So it is what it is, depending on, again, if he wants to give up another first rounder, prospects, like how deep does he want to go? People are saying get a goalie and move Peter Mrazek's contract. I'm like, okay, yeah, so you're going to give up another second or third rounder just to get rid of a mistake? It catches up to you. This may be the best that it really is for the Leafs to go try to beat a Tampa Bay or Florida. I don't think Kyle can keep up with the Joneses here at this trade deadline. So you hope that you have enough offense. You hope that they've learned enough on the defensive side. And you hope somebody steps up. Is it going to be Jack Campbell or is it going to be Cinderella? We don't know.
Kipper and Bourne will have the last word today, 3 p.m., Nick Kyprios, thanks for joining us. It's going to be an interesting weekend in Leafland.
Okay. All right, guys.
I got to tell you, Kipper, before you go, I need some of that little Buddha my way, too. I promise I won't bail on the show after getting into them.
But you know what? We got to get to the point where we actually physically see each other on a daily basis, everybody, so I can just...
It's only on Tuesdays. It's only as we change studios after the Raptors show.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to bring a case in, and then I'll watch you guys go at it like seagulls on popcorn at the beach.
Thanks, Kipper. Have a great weekend, man.
All right, guys. You too.
Nick Kyprios, former NHL forward, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. Not super optimistic that the Leafs will make a big move. You know who might make a big move, Justin? The Florida Panthers. You know who else might make a big move? The listener, who can go see the Leafs play those Panthers on March 27th. All you have to do is download today's show, Monday's show, Tuesday's show, the Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Listen for the code word that'll be placed in each podcast. Text that code word to 590-590 for your chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry, so you can enter three times. The winner will be selected next Wednesday, March 23rd. Again, we're giving you tickets to Leafs Panthers on March 27th. Download the Fan Morning Show today, Monday, Tuesday. Text the code words to 590-590. Find out Wednesday if you're going to see the Leafs and the Panthers. We'll find out Monday if the Leafs you're watching will be as currently constructed or if they'll be a little different. We'll find out by Monday if the Panthers you're seeing will be as currently constructed or look a little different. We've got one segment left with Justin Cuthbert. We've got one segment left before deadline day. Obviously, our show Monday morning takes place before the trade deadline. We've got that 6 to 10 a.m. block where, I don't know, Justin, how does... So the NBA normally works where, like, you'll get one or two in the week leading up to the trade deadline, but it's that, like, 1:30 to 3 p.m. chaos window where everything kind of happens. I know you're not on the show, but imagine you are. Are we getting anything live like the Matt Chapman trade during our show on Monday, or is the NHL kind of take the NBA playbook and grind it out to 2 p.m.?
Yeah, I mean, there's generally that late flurry. I think, you know, the trade breaking while you guys on, I think it's possible. I mean, 4 hours, you're probably going to get something, albeit maybe only small. But I think the one thing that doesn't work in your favor is that generally Sunday night is very busy. Generally, Sunday night before the trade deadline eve, if you want to call it, there's something that happens. There's like a major domino that falls. Maybe there's a corresponding move in relation to that major domino. And for that reason, it seems that the GMs are up a little bit late and maybe a little late to start on Monday morning. And of course, we're talking about a lot of West Coast teams, Western Conference, and your show starts at 6. That means it's 3. Like, it's generally things wait until the afternoon on deadline day because of that reason, and because Sunday night is a key night for general managers trying to get things done because they don't want to wait till the 11th hour.
Yeah, that's what I would want to do as a GM as well. But I don't know. I feel like if I was a buyer, that's what I'd want to do. If I was a seller, I would maybe wait until, I don't know. I guess that depends on it being a seller's market to effectively pull that off. I will say I'll be up late Sunday anyway because the Raptors play the 76ers and it's an 8:30 tip-off, which sucks for lifestyle reasons on a Sunday night. But when it's also the round of 32 March Madness and the eve of the NHL trade deadline, not going to complain. No complaints here whatsoever. Also, that Raptors-Sixers game should be awesome. The Raptors, again, of course, have the Los Angeles Lakers tonight. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to kick it back to March Madness. Today is day 2 of the men's tournament, day 1 of the women's tournament. We're going to talk to Clark Kellogg of CBS. We're going to talk to Anila Khan of her hoop stats. We're going to kick around what you should know heading into the men's and women's March Madness weekend. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, his last segment with us for this little three-week stretch. Justin Cuthbert as producer Daniele on the aux cord. And again, if you want to know what songs we're talking about or you want to relive them, the Fan Morning Show aux cord Fridays playlist on Spotify. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Fan Morning Show wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. I have a bone to pick with new Blue Jays third baseman Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman's going to be on Blair and Barker on the station sometime in the 10 a.m. hour. Blair and Barker back in full swing now with spring training. Excited to check them out daily on the station. However, Bo Bichette and Santiago Espinal, this is a tweet from Hazel May. They showed up at 6:15 this morning to the spring training complex and got asked when Matt Chapman was showing up. And they said, oh, he's been here since 5 a.m. If Matt Chapman is that level of rise and grind and he's at the facility at 5 a.m., brother, we have a 6 to 10 a.m. radio show. That's 4 hours to fill. Come on with that. Blair and Barker are selling out stadiums no matter what. Come on the 6 to 10 a.m. Blair and Barker don't need the Matt Chapman rub. The Fan Morning Show, Blake Murphy needs the Matt Chapman rub. You're already up that early anyway. Unbelievable match. Way to start off on the wrong foot with us.
Well, he wouldn't be able to put in 5 straight hours of straight grind if he were to appear on our show here. So I feel like that's probably the issue. Or, you know, maybe he just prefers Blair Barker. But
yeah, look,
you got time. You got time to make
that relationship.
That sounds
to me from you like someone who doesn't understand the grind. To think that you can't get 5 hours of grind in by 10 a.m., is obscene to me. We're 3.5 hours into this show. I've already got 4.5 hours of grind in, and we've got half an hour left before 10 a.m. So, Matt Chapman, I'm here. I'm up early. We're on the air every day. But check that out, Blair and Barker at 10 a.m. They're back daily now, weekdays. They've also got, don't forget, just a reminder that we're back with Blue Jays coverage on the Sportsnet Radio Network starting Sunday, the 1 p.m. Jays-Pirates game. We had voice of the Blue Jays, Ben Wagner, on earlier in the show. Make sure you go back and check that out. And check him out Sunday on the call for that one. I'll be co-hosting the pregame show from noon to 1 p.m. with Sho Ali and Blair and Barker. We'll have the postgame show for you. Keep an eye out a little later as well for a full breakdown of our spring training coverage at Sportsnet and here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's been an exciting week for the Blue Jays, but if you're not all the way there with Blue Jays excitement. That might be because you're an NCAA basketball fan, and it's day two of men's March Madness, day one of women's March Madness. There is a lot of college basketball to sort through today. There are 32 games between those two tournaments. I don't know how degenerate you guys get if you're dabbling with NIT as well. If you're a Wake Forest fan and you're checking out some of those off the radar prospects, you know, hey, Wake Forest, VCU is tomorrow. My bad. I thought it was today. Your NIT action is tomorrow. So there's a lot to sort through here. We're going to be joined momentarily by Clark Kellogg, the former NBA forward, former Ohio State player, and the CBS college basketball analyst. Always a blast to watch those panels as they juggle 16 games, or I guess four per station yesterday. We're also going to have Anila Khan on in a few moments, who runs herhoopstats.com, which is, as I'm filling out my women's March Madness bracket the other day, an invaluable resource. Justin, do you have a game today you're most looking forward to?
Oh, we mentioned on the Wake and Rake, it's Loyola and Ohio State. I mean, if there's like a public money team, Ohio State definitely fills that bill or fits that bill. And Loyola, you know, they're a tournament team. They're well known, definitely, from, you know, casuals and more serious fans alike. But Loyola has interested me to the point where threw a little future to win the South region. I think it's the South region that they're in. So I'm hoping that, you know, Ohio State is a bit fraudulent and they're able to sort of go on a little run, and me and Sister Jean will be cheering just as hard.
Yeah, the tough part there is Ohio State does not profile as fraudulent. I'm in on Loyola too. They're my Wake and Rake pick. But it's a risky one because Ohio State has, like I mentioned earlier, one of the better last 30 days boosts. Loyola's really played up, though, when they've gotten to play against top competition. So that should be, what a game to start it off with. I am hoping to be, I have an annual tradition, Justin, that dates back to, I want to say, March Madness 2005. Me and some buddies from university who, one of the first days, every year it's a get together, whether it's in person at someone's house. Last year it was in someone's backyard, all bundled up because we weren't able to do indoor things. We've gone a couple times. We've done the games in Buffalo. We've done the games in Pittsburgh. Joined now by a man who does the games every year. Always look forward to hearing his analysis. It's Clark Kellogg, the former NBA forward, Ohio State alumnus, and current CBS college basketball analyst. Clark, how's it going this morning?
I am terrific. Now, I don't know by voice, so I think we've got Blake and Justin. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And who am I speaking with now? I think have I been on with you before, Blake?
You have not been on with me before, Clark. I'm excited to have you on. Our other co-host, JD, is off today. He's had you on before, but this is a first for me. It's an honor, man.
All right, my pleasure. Great to be with you guys this morning.
So yesterday was a pretty crazy day. A few upsets, a few OT games. What was the biggest surprise for you going through those games?
Oh, clearly Kentucky losing to St. Peter's. I mean, the Peacocks were up to the challenge. I mean, they didn't fluke their way into this win. They actually were there from the start, never let up. I think the window between margin both ways was 6 to 8 points either way in terms of lead, and they made clutch plays. Guard play was fantastic. But, yeah, that clearly was the biggest surprise. Then the next one would have been Iowa and Richmond. Although I like the Richmond team, I just felt Iowa had been playing so well and presented problems from a length and offensive firepower standpoint. But defense ruled today in that one. And brilliant guard play again. Jacob Gilliard for Richmond was fantastic. I think he had 24, 6, and 6 and managed the game beautifully for Richmond. And then they got good play from complementary players as well. Those two probably stood out. Clearly the Kentucky one took the Richter scale to another level.
Yeah, the Kentucky one, so I know no one cares about anyone else's brackets, but I did have Murray State upsetting Kentucky in the next round, and I'm sitting all high and mighty, and then Murray State almost squanders the opportunity. I'm curious, though, we'll see them in action today. The team that might stand the gain the most from Kentucky being knocked out is the 3 seed in the East, Purdue, whose their path looks a little clearer now if they can get past Yale today. Purdue's a team to watch here in Canada, obviously, because of 7'3" center Zach Edey, who spent some time on the national team. Obviously a great prospect in Jaden Ivey. Do you like Purdue, and do you think they can take advantage of this suddenly weaker, half of the East region.
Hey, man, Blake, you've been watching this. Justin, you've been watching it for a while. There's no easy path. I mean, there's paths that look easy on paper, but we don't play the games on paper. The games are played in that 94-by-50-foot box. And I like Purdue's team. Defensively, they don't measure up historically to what championship teams have looked like. But I always say history repeats itself until it doesn't. So there's always an opportunity for a first time or to go against what history says. Clearly, they've got an opportunity. But I tell you what, that Virginia Tech team is a potent, confident team, much like Richmond. Found themselves in the field by virtue of winning the conference tournament. That doesn't always mean that you're going to advance, but it certainly has you in do-or-die mode earlier than some of the other teams that are in the field. And that can sometimes serve you well, that pressure of having to get there and the way they've done it. Virginia Tech was terrific in the ACC tournament, and they've got some matchup problems. I mean, Kiva Aluma, Hunter Couture, Justin Mutz, those guys can play, are really well coached. I see them meeting Purdue in that round of 32 matchup, and I've got Purdue moving on, but I don't know if easy would be the right way to describe it.
Yeah, sorry. Easier, I guess, on paper. That Virginia Tech That Virginia Tech-Texas game at 4:30 looks like one of the better ones on the slate. Clark, you guys at CBS, you have what Justin and I think might be the game of the day in Ohio State against Loyola Chicago at 12:15. That gets our slate started today. We both kind of like Loyola. I know it's not a huge upset at 10-7, and betting-wise, it's more of a pick 'em. Do you think this Loyola Chicago team can make a little bit of a run here, or at least get past Ohio State this morning, this afternoon?
Well, you know, I don't have on my CBS uniform yet, and you know I'm an Ohio State alum, and my heart is there. And I do think Ohio State, this is not an uncomfortable matchup for Ohio State from a personnel standpoint. The Buckeyes have some limitations. They don't have great length on the perimeter. They have yet to establish a third score in light of Justice Suing being out all year, Seth Towns being out all year to injury. Kyle Young is a question mark because he's been in concussion protocol. Zed Key is recovering from an ankle injury. So they're banged up. They kind of limp in here. But I think they're as close to being fully healthy as they've been in a minute. And I'm hopeful that Zed and Kyle can play. I like Ohio State in this matchup. And I actually, assuming Villanova moves on, that too is not an overwhelming matchup for Ohio State's personnel. And sometimes you can find momentum in the tournament. It doesn't look great, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Loyola's a really tough team, and I could see where it'd be a pick 'em, and most folks might be leaning that way. But I'm going to hang my hat on the Buckeyes. I think they're going to find what they need to get it done today and then have a chance to maybe have a more surprising win, assuming Villanova gets past Delaware.
This is how I know you're a pro, Clark. I'm trying to bait you a little bit with a picking against Ohio State, seeing if you'll take it, and it's a reasonable and well thought out answer instead of and coming at me with EJ Flexen or something like that.
One of the things I do, excuse me, Blake, for cutting you off, but one of the things I do like is that I know EJ and Malachi Branham. I've got great confidence in their competitive spirit in addition to their games. And so those guys in these matches will not be overmatched, I don't think. Now, that could happen, but I just don't think those guys will be overmatched. They might not play well, but I don't think either one of those guys will be overmatched. And when you've got two guys like that, it does give you some confidence.
What's your take on Duke, Clark? You've got them in the 7 o'clock game against Fullerton tonight. They've got an interesting matchup if they get through that with either Davidson or Michigan State, and Texas Tech also looming in the Gonzaga bracket. Do you think Duke is vulnerable in Coach K's last tourney here after what happened in the conference tournament?
I certainly think so, Justin. Clearly they are talented, very talented. I mean, they've got multiple NBA prospects on the roster, but the bulk of those guys are young. And we know from history that youth typically doesn't survive the gauntlet of the one-and-done tournament format. You require some level of experience. Talent, I think, is always preferred, but you would also like to have really good experienced talent, and they just aren't quite there. I don't know how the emotion of this being Coach K's last season affects those young guys or affects the whole team, quite honestly. That's hard to read, and there's no way of really knowing that. I think those two things could provide some headwind. In addition to the opponents they'll face, I think they get by Fullerton. That's a good team with good guards and a good big guy. He's not a huge guy, E.J. Anasicki, but he's capable of a double-double, pretty mobile, but a little bit undersized. I think Duke's size could swallow him up. But the guards are pretty good, and we know good guards can help you. But I like Duke getting to that next round against Michigan State. And we know how Tom Izzo and his teams have typically fared in the tournament. When you count them out, they surprise you. So I could see Michigan State, Duke, if that happens, Michigan State finding a way to grind out a win. And if it doesn't happen there, then that Texas Tech team, I think, would be very formidable for Duke based on its experience and how good that team is defensively.
Michigan State and Davidson coming in as two of the hottest teams. That's another game you've got today. Clark Kellogg, CBS college basketball analyst, former NBA forward, and yes, Ohio State alum. Enjoy the games today, man. Looking forward to your analysis, and thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Blake. Justin, you enjoy the madness as well. We got off to a crazy, wild day, and you know what? I think we might have a little more of that in store even today.
Thanks, Clark. That's Clark Kellogg of CBS. That's what's ahead for the men's side of March Madness. The women's side of March Madness also begins today. To help us break that down, she runs herhoopstats.com and is an invaluable follow for all women's basketball on Twitter. Anila Khan. Anila, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. 32 basketball games to sort through today before even getting to the NBA slate and the Raptors playing LeBron tonight, potentially. So crazy day. It's a basketball fan's dream. As the women's tournament kicks off, what is the story you're most looking forward to this year?
I'm just looking forward to just generally seeing how the number one seeds hold up. As people know, number one seed South Carolina was actually upset in their conference tournament final, and Kentucky won the auto bid instead. So I want to see, can they rebound? Can they come back from this? Can they eventually win the championship? And I'd love to just see generally how everyone else fares, and just to enjoy the tournament generally.
Kentucky, for anyone who doesn't have the contact, they, even with that win, ends up with a sixth seed in a different region. So pretty big upset there. South Carolina, you know, I go through herhoopstats.com, Anila, and I'm trying to fill up my bracket. And even after that loss, it's like, darn, like South Carolina is really strong still. What was Kentucky able to do against them that maybe, hey, a team like Miami or USF that gets through, or looking ahead a little bit, an Arizona or Iowa State, what's the weakness that South Carolina, that was revealed there in that Kentucky loss?
I think that in that loss, Kentucky was able to use their strength of their star player, Ryan Howard. And as for people that don't know, Ryan Howard is going to be, in my opinion, the number one draft pick for the 2002 draft. And so I think they were able to use her strength. I think South Carolina just didn't have what they usually have or against Kentucky. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting to watch in the tournament. Can they handle that? Because as you know, there's only one game, so you have to be on your best. And for technically for any number one seeds in the NCAA women's tournament, they usually do pretty well in the first couple of rounds. So I just want to see how they handle the Sweet 16 matchup, the Elite Eight, etc.
So that South Carolina team has a pretty notable Canadian who anyone who's been following the women's national program is familiar with in Letitia Amma here. We found out what the women's draw is going to be for the Women's World Cup in Australia this September. Obviously a tough one, and Anila will be up at all hours of the night. How has Letitia looked at this last little bit? And then are there any other notable Canadians that a Canadian basketball fan should have their eye on as action gets underway today?
Leticia's been great. She's been coming off the bench, and she's been helping them in terms of their second unit power. And she's been doing better. And as people are not aware, she's a sophomore. And so, junior. My apologies. And then, so her ability to be that valuable contributor off the bench really helped South Carolina, and in terms of being a strong team individually. And as for other Canadians, there are in total 20 Canadian women, but there's three others that I'm actually really looking forward to. I'm actually looking forward to seeing Aaliyah Edwards from UConn, Yvonne Ijim from Gonzaga, and Shayna Pellington from Arizona, as you mentioned earlier. Arizona, by the way, just to give people a heads up, was actually in the 2021 NCAA championship game. So it'll be interesting to see what Shayna Pellington, a senior guard and Team Canadian player, can do for Arizona.
Yeah, I got to see a little bit of Pellington in the Women's America Cup last year. So that's an exciting one there. You mentioned Connecticut as well. And I don't know how, I don't know how to evaluate Connecticut when I'm filling out a bracket. They're a two seed this year. And I just like, the default is always, of course, Connecticut's going to win. I know that the field has changed since then. And South Carolina is the team at the top. And again, Connecticut's not even a one seed. But I find myself defaulting to, in a tough choice, I'm going to pick Connecticut. How are their chances this year? And do they have a path to getting back to that powerhouse that we've seen from them the last decade plus?
It's an interesting and great point. For me, having seen UConn all year long, they are strong, but they're not as strong as previously stated. But just because... with the injury of Paige Beckers and just coming along slowly, but she's not 100% there. So I would have UConn all the way up until the Elite Eight. And then after that, I'm not so sure they can advance, but this is just my opinion. So I'd be careful in terms of picking out UConn this year. I think if fans do want to see UConn, I would just the first round game will actually be on ABC, so we can watch it on local TV here and then just enjoy it. But I wouldn't be as strong as UConn this year than like any other year.
You mentioned earlier, last one before we let you go here, Anila. Obviously, Paige is a huge prospect to watch. She's not in the draft this year. But you mentioned Ryan Howard out of Kentucky as your pick for the number one pick. A name I'm curious about is Kirsten Bell out of Florida Gulf Coast. Is she enough of a, first of all, I'm curious where you think she could go in the draft and where she may be a good fit. But could Florida Gulf Coast be spicy when, except for maybe a couple matchups, they could have the best player on the floor in a lot of these games?
Yep, I agree 100%. For Kirsten Bell, I think she goes in the top 10. I would have her as number 5 or 6 just because of what she can do. She's a great scorer. And you know, just like the men's tournament yesterday, you never know when the upsets can happen. So I think in that 5-12 matchup in the opening round, they're facing Virginia Tech. Even though Virginia Tech will be a really great opponent, Elizabeth Kitley will play really well, and that team will do well. But I think they're going to be that's going to be a tough matchup, and I think Kirsten Bell will do really well. So just seeing her, I think she has that also the opportunity to play really well and increase her draft spot if Florida Gulf Coast doesn't advance.
Anila Khan at W Hoops Blogger on Twitter. You can check out her work at Her Hoop Stats, at W Basketball Blog. Invaluable follow for all things women's basketball, especially if you're a fan of the Canadian senior women's national team. Anila, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, and enjoy today, enjoy this weekend, enjoy these next couple weeks. It's going to be a blast.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, Blake. I hope you have the same lovely day as we did yesterday.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, the Canadian prospects on the women's side come through like they did on the men's side yesterday. Good day for Canadian hoops. That was Anil Akhon again. Herhoopstats.com. If you haven't filled out your bracket yet, I think you still have time because those games don't tip off quite yet. Anywhere you get your brackets should have the women's bracket as well. I went chalk, Justin. I have South Carolina topping another one seed in NC State in the final there. Just even with the Kentucky loss, couldn't bring myself to pick against them and pick against Leticia. But I do have Florida Gulf Coast pulling off the upset in the first round. So I'm glad Anila backed that up for me. Justin, this is your last couple minutes doing 3 weeks with us. Ailish is back Monday. JD's back Monday. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time with us, doing these 3 weeks with us, all your insight, especially on the hockey front ahead of the deadline. Hope you had a good time, man.
No, it was a blast. I mean, you've been my rock here, Blake. Like, I've been on a couple days here and there, did a week in November when Ailish was with us. But whenever I'm on, you're on. So, you know, you've helped me obviously tremendously filling in here, and everyone who's been a part of, like, we've had a, you know, decent rotation of people involved here. Vic, D, Show, Fabro. And of course, JD, everyone's been awesome. So I can't thank you guys enough. Makes it easy. And, you know, 4 hours of talking sports, like, it seems easier than it is. But I gain an appreciation every time for you guys, because this is not as easy as it might seem.
Yeah, 4 hours is it's a lot to fill. It's not a lot to fill on days like this where we have so many great guests and producer Daniele gives us this banger of a lineup. And there's still like that feeling of, oh, shoot, we probably could have talked about Baker Mayfield for an extra 10 minutes. Or we probably could have gone through five more trade deadline targets for the Leafs. Or we could ask Ben Wagner to give us the full Josh Palacios breakdown, or Hagen Danner, you know, hey, he's hitting 97, 98 in the pen. What does that look like for the Jays bullpen? So days like this are easy. Working with you's easy. Having producer Daniele around's easy. Loaded weekend ahead of Monday's show. Monday is, of course, the NHL trade deadline. So keep it dialed to Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, for all your NHL trade deadline needs through the weekend and into our show and the shows that follow on Monday. We've also got Raptors-Lakers tonight at 7:30 on Sportsnet. Raptors-76ers Sunday at 8:30 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Leafs-Predators Saturday at 7:30 on Sportsnet. The Jays are back in spring training action today, and we're back on the radio on the Sportsnet radio network Sunday at 12 p.m. for a little pregame show with me and Show. 1 p.m., Ben Wagner on the call. Blair and Barker with a postgame show after that. Blair and Barker following us right now, and they'll be joined by new Blue Jays third baseman and future best third baseman. I don't know. Scott Rolen. Scott, it's going to be tough to put Chapman past Scott Rolen defensively, but man, am I excited to watch Matt Chapman in the field. He'll be on Blair and Barker next. Justin Cuthbert at JC Cuthbert on Twitter. Thanks so much for taking the time these 3 weeks. Everyone give him a follow. Hope you guys enjoyed having him. We'll be back with the full usual crew Monday. It's The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Have a great weekend.